For over 20 years, the Mindset List has been a source of discussion for incoming college students. The list is now produced at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Tommy Zurhellen is an associate professor of English at Marist College and the director of the Marist Mindset List. We spoke recently, and I asked him about the history of the list.
Well, the list started in 1998 in Beloit College, which is actually my alma mater. I graduated from Beloit College in 1991 as an undergraduate. And my mentor, Tom McBride, is one of the creators of the list at Beloit. And a couple of years ago, I got a call from my old mentor, Tom McBride, asking if Marist would be interested in carrying the torch of the Mindset List into the future after, 22 years or so of them working on it. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity, and I became the director of the Marist Mindset List last year. And our first list, totally done by Marist faculty, just came out August 23rd. We're really excited about it.
Well, let's go and talk about just what is the list. What does it list, and what is its purpose?
Sure. Well, the list started out as kind of a mind your references list for faculty members across the country when dealing with their incoming freshmen when the list started back in 1998. And since then, it's become kind of a cultural trivia list. So, students basically, it's become a never or always list for our students. So, for instance, the students this year were not around for 9/11. So they've only known it as a historical item and things like that. So, cell phones, obviously technology, it's a generational gap thing. But this year here at Marist, we wanted to, dig a little deeper. We turned it into kind of a cultural compass. A lot of times the Beloit Mindset List was basically looking at incoming students, but we wanted to now include those students in the conversation. So we're delving deeper into issues that the class of 2024 really care about. And that was the marked difference in this year's list.
And how is the list used by both faculty and students?
The new list is used by faculty and students basically to create meaningful conversations in and out of the classroom. So between students and their professors, between students and their peers, even between students and their faculty, we found there's 10 different items, each on a different discipline. That's really a bedrock discipline here at Marist, like fashion, sports communication, for instance. And so there's something for everyone to talk about on the list. And along with each item, there's plenty of research and further reading and things. So it's like an instant conversation waiting to happen in the classroom.
Have those 10 items always been the same, or do they change over the years?
They're going to change. So this is the first year of the new format of the list. Previously, it was a list of, 50 to 60 to 70 just kind of random items about, students born in, this year would be 2002, for instance. But now we're just focusing on really touchstone issues to teach students how to have those meaningful conversations, academic conversations, rather than just, listing kind of trivia facts.
And each incoming class gets their own list?
That's exactly right. And it's not a one-and-done thing. So we're going to be polling and asking the incoming students now, the class of 2024, what they're interested in. And we're going to build next year's list with the help of that. So, it was hard this year to get student input with COVID, getting students in the same room together. But for next year, we definitely want to do that and have serious student input into the class of 2025 list.
Well, COVID certainly did have an influence on the list. I mean, you talk about some of the subject items in there. One of them that you mentioned was fashion. But the fashion is the necessity of personal protection equipment driving fashion trends.
Well, we polled all our faculty for the items on the list. The Mindset team is myself, Professor Eugene Lee in art, and also Dr. Vanessa Lin in criminal justice. And we polled our faculty for this year's list on what issues might be really interesting for our incoming students. And You hit it on the head, Bob. The fashion item, that PPE production is really going to drive the fashion industry. And we know this because we've got an amazing fashion department here at Marist. We talk to our fashion faculty, and they are all over the list item this year in their classes and looking at the research we brought with it. And it's really become kind of a touchstone item for them.
COVID is not the only major current event that has shaped the list. The Black Lives Matter movement is in there, and that is under the arts.
Well, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement is really important to our incoming students, and we might think of it as a social justice issue or perhaps a political or historical issue, but it really pervades all disciplines, and we thought that a good way to show would be to show a different side of that movement through art. So young artists, and we have a great example of it with our art item on the mindset list from a Marist student doing a lino cut art based on the Black Lives Matter movement. But we really want to show a different side. So it's not just, you know, in the news. It's not just politics. It has to do with creativity and art and other things as well.
How have the students bought into this as a starting point for discussion?
Students absolutely love it, and they can't wait to have more input on next year's list. As we discussed, it was hard to get student input, direct student input on this list. But students, it's been so easy using the mindset list in classroom conversations here at Marist, and from what I'm hearing at other schools as well, because these are the issues students actually care about. In previous lists, there were items that help the older generation perhaps understand where the younger generation is coming from. But this is the first list where the items are all items where the students have a stake in it. The students have an opinion. And since we're a university, you know, part of our job is to help the students find their voice, shape their opinions, you know, for that world ahead of them.
I'm taking a look at some of the subjects under each different category, and one is education. And this is a subject that could have been on the list when I went to college, banned books for education. This is just never going to go away, is it?
Never. And, you know, what we found is, students see banned books as something from the past, maybe like a black and white movie or something. But banned books are still around all over America. And one of their favorite book series, Harry Potter, has been one of the most banned books in America since they had been born. So they were really surprised to hear things like that censorship and things like that still exist in their world.
So look ahead. What do you see as the future of the list at Marist?
Well, I think we also already mentioned that we're definitely going to have a lot more student input as we move forward. Again, getting those touchstone issues right, the touchstone issues that the students really care about, I think that's our most important goal. We're also producing a podcast, the Marist Mindcast, that's going to give an in-depth look to each of the 10 items on the list, each with an episode of the podcast. So we're going to invite faculty from Marist, faculty and experts from other schools and disciplines, as well as students from all over to kind of have a conversation about each item, which is going to be a lot of fun. We're also looking forward to inviting virtually at first, of course, experts in the field in each of these disciplines to talk to our students at Marist and illuminate all the issues that they care about. They might not know everything about these issues, and that's our job, just to, you know, make them curious about them and want to find out more. We're always looking for new suggestions for next year's list and how to make it better, but we're really proud of this year's list, and we know that, you know, a lot of people who enjoyed the entertainment value of the old list might not appreciate at first what we're trying to do here. But remember, this list, it's for the students. It's for the faculty. It might not have the entertainment value, perhaps, of the old list, but it's definitely got a lot more serious heft to it that we're really proud about.
Tommy Zurhellen is an associate professor of English and the director of the Marist Mindset List at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. You can find out more about the list at marist.edu. still to come, a cable network is offering cash prizes to students who produce some really great newsy videos. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. C-SPAN has announced its 17th annual C-SPAN Student Cam Competition. This challenges students to produce timely videos about current events and rewards the best with cash prizes and a chance to have their video shown on the network. Here to talk about this year's competition is Pam McGorry, Education Program Senior Specialist at C-SPAN. I asked her to tell us what students will be working on this year.
This year, we're asking students to explore the issue you most want the president and new Congress to address in 2021. And we've already been connecting with student groups and their teachers so far, and they're really engaged. And now is the time, these unprecedented times with so many things going on. And they're asking us questions about what we're looking for, and we're here to answer those questions. But it really is about them. We want them to choose an issue that is important to them and relevant to their lives. So we've had them ask about mental health. We've had them ask about the freedoms and education. And you know, every day we're all impacted by so many issues that are going on in the nation. But this year, it's really impacting the youth even more. So we're excited to hear from them what they think on these issues.
Is this just straight reporting, or are they allowed to do opinions or editorials?
What we're asking them to do is once they select their topic, we want them to get out there and do the research. So it shines when we look at their videos and we can tell when they're interested in what they're researching. And we want them to do that so that they'll be invested in whatever they're learning about. So we want them to look at different perspectives on it. We want them to challenge what they're already thinking, get out there and interview people who are related to your topic, who are involved in your topic, whether they are experts, whether they are locally elected officials, all the way up to federal officials. Every year we hear students who are so surprised and excited when they hear back from people who they weren't sure that they would hear from. So get out there, interview people, get those different perspectives and package it all together in a 5 to 6 minute documentary and submit it by January 20th, 2021.
I see in the rules that they must include C-SPAN video clips. If they are requested, do you provide those clips or do they have to start recording TV themselves?
There's a number of ways they can do that. If they go to studentcam.org, we do have some videos on a number of topics that they can choose from, and they can create shorter clips from that. Again, looking for that balance and that diversity and several of the clips. Or they can go to cspan.org because we have a whole video archive library, and they can go in there and find videos that are related to their topic, and they can create short clips from those.
Are there any past winners that stick out?
There are, and I have been a part of C-SPAN's education team for over 10 years now. I mean, our small team, the three of us, we're all former classroom teachers, and we always get excited about this because it allows us to connect with students now that we're out of the classroom. But there are, and I say that because we follow up with some of these students. We stay in touch with them either through email or social media, and sometimes they'll come to the offices and visit. And we see some of them who have gone off to film school, some who are it's incredible the directions that their lives have taken from this program. And as a matter of fact, we have occasionally have them come back and intern at C-SPAN to further their own learning and their own careers throughout this, you know, throughout their experience with Student Cam.
Tell us about the C-SPAN Classroom. What is that?
C-SPAN Classroom is C-SPAN Television Network's education arm. So what our team does is sift through all of C-SPAN's programs on public affairs, American history, and nonfiction books. And our team creates shorter video-based resources that are free for teachers to use in their classroom to teach about all different kinds of topics. So we have our own website, and that is free for teachers to visit and get resources from. They can go to cspan.org/classroom for that. So that's one part of what our team does. Another part of what our team does is we connect your teachers through professional development experiences. We truly love, every July, we host summer educator conferences for middle school and high school teachers, and we also have a fellowship program where we bring teachers in to collaborate with us for the summer. And this summer was a challenge. We weren't able to do that, so we shifted those experiences to online programs. Good news is we were able to connect with more teachers nationwide through these virtual platforms and work with additional fellows. So those teachers who are in the classroom and see the need for resources, particularly with this hybrid model, online, in-person, uncertain future. So that's another thing what we do with professional development. We also connect with teachers throughout the year doing virtual professional development. So teachers who are looking for online resources to use, particularly during this time. So it's another portion of what we do. And certainly StudentCam is the other big project that our team works on.
A few years ago, I was lucky enough to tour the C-SPAN bus, which was sat at a local school. I'm sure that's not happening right now in the age of COVID. Any word on when that'll start up again?
I'm glad you got to experience the C-SPAN bus. Yeah, it truly is such a fun experience being able to travel around the country and visit students at their schools. And we did have to put that on hold. Traditionally, you know, when this all happened in the spring, we announced our winners in March for StudentCam. And then the marketing team, they hit the road running, and our team will go out and visit local winners, as many as we can, with or without the bus, just to recognize those students and have those ceremonies in their local communities and at their schools. This year, we had to shift those to virtual experiences as well, which was equally as really exciting and successful. But the bus is on hold for the time being, and we'll see what the future brings.
Well, finally, let's talk about the goodies. What are some of the prizes in this competition?
Oh, wow. Well, we award a total of $100,000 in cash prizes. There are 150 student prizes and over 50 teacher prizes. So our grand prize winner is selected from grades 6 through 12, and that winner wins $5,000. Now, students can compete by themselves with a partner or in a team of three, but if they are a team of three or a duo, they're going to have to share that $5,000. But we also have several first prize winners. So middle school, grades 6 through 8, is judged in one category. High school, grades 9 through 12, is judged in another category. And those are broken down into regions. Again, if people go to studentcam.org, they can see the breakdown of that map. But first prize winners win $3,000. We have several second prize winners that will win $1,500. More third prize winners that win $750. And then 97 honorable mentions that will win $250 each for that particular film. And teachers whose students win top prizes, they can win money as well. And the really exciting news is that top winners, grand through second prizes, their videos air on the network throughout the month of April. So students get to see nationwide their videos air and really celebrated across the country.
Hopefully you'll have a big box full of stuff by January 20th.
Oh, yeah. We look forward to it every year. It's just a few months of judging videos. And, you know, we truly, and I really want to drive this point home, is, you know, being former classroom teachers, we recognize all the hard work and value, all the effort that these students put into creating their documentary. So we look at them closely. The videos are judged several times as they make it through the round so that we make sure we're really focusing on the elements of it. And it really is about the content, and it's really about how they tell their story. We recognize not everybody has bells and whistles, and particularly now, you know, students can get out there and conduct interviews. If they can't do it in person, they can do it over the phone. They can do it through whatever video conferencing platform they want. Some students have also done it through email. So, like I said, we just recognize the content of it is most important.
Pam McGorry is the Education Program Senior Specialist at C-SPAN. Details about entering the competition can be found at studentcam.org. Researchers have determined that veterans of color have higher rates of mental health issues compared with white veterans. Some psychologists at the Department of Veterans Affairs say that may be because of race-based stress and trauma. They've begun an effort to help black veterans recognize and deal with those challenges. Emily Elena Dugdale reports for the American Homefront Project.
Army veteran Jared McBride served in the military for 22 years, rising to the rank of captain. In 2009, McBride, who's black, volunteered to become a commander for a unit headed to Afghanistan. But that didn't happen.
My boss was white, and he gave it to another white guy.
A white guy McBride said wasn't as qualified as he was. McBride said this and other bad experiences chewed away at him for years.
One of my fellow officers was like, man, McBride, you are just, woo! You have some anger issues, man.
McBride eventually left the military and decided to seek mental health care at his local VA in St. Louis. He was diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And as his treatment continued, he was offered the chance to take part in one of the VA's first programs that addresses how racism affects veterans' mental health. VA psychologists across the country had begun to recognize that as something that was too often ignored.
Our book that kind of has all the diagnostic criteria, which is the DSM-5, it doesn't recognize racial trauma.
That's Dr. Lamish Shawaheen, who used to work at the VA in Chicago. And the book she's talking about, the DSM-5, that's what psychologists use to diagnose a patient.
Experiencing racism was turning into like people being labeled with pathology when really they were just experiencing racism.
Shawaheen and other VA psychologists instead zeroed in on how racial discrimination contributes to things like post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and anxiety in people of color. Studies have shown that veterans of color have higher rates of mental health issues like PTSD than white veterans, even when controlling for where they were deployed and the pressures of returning from war. Shawaheen says part of the problem is that the military pushes the concept of color blindness, but that exacerbates race-based stress by emphasizing sameness.
This idea, yeah, we're all green, and these type of slogans, they instill the notion that racial differences are not important in the military.
Veterans of color also don't use the VA's mental health services as much as they could. And some stop seeking help altogether because they become dissatisfied with their care. Shawaheen and other VA psychologists got a grant in 2018 to create the program to help veterans identify racism as the source of at least some of their anxiety. The model was group meetings for veterans of color. VA officials declined to be interviewed about the program or provide information about it. But several veterans talked to me about how the sessions worked. Army veteran Jared McBride joined one of the first small groups in St. Louis. He said the psychologist would start by writing a topic on a whiteboard.
Let's just say police brutality. He would get into what does that look like to you and how do you feel about that?
McBride said it was the first time anyone had ever talked to the veterans in his group about how the racism they endured every day affected their mental health.
We got some guys to hold on to this thing for years. And so when you bring up different topics and different things, sometimes it gets emotional and explosive.
In 2018, Army veteran Bernadette Spiller cautiously joined one of the groups in St. Louis after seeing a flyer in the VA hallway.
I didn't want to go to therapy because I looked at it as like a sign of weakness.
But she sat herself down at a group session. And after sitting in on a few meetings and listening to others speak, she realized that so many stressors in her life were being triggered by racism.
It kind of gives you like an arsenal of being able to go in your little treasure chest and say, okay, well, I've heard that somebody experienced it this way.
Veterans said the group gives them mechanisms for coping with racism, so they feel safer when grappling with painful memories and experiences. I'm Emily Elena Dugdale.
Sometimes when it comes to helping veterans with mental health issues, four legs are better than two. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Pets can play a huge role in getting through a stressful situation. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Ashley O'Connor, assistant professor of social work at the University of Alaska Anchorage, discusses why.
I worked for the Department of Veterans Affairs for 10 years and saw firsthand the need for different ways of working with individuals who have experienced trauma. I worked on a research study that paired service and emotional support dogs with veterans who struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder. The veterans often brought up how the dogs gave them unconditional love, a sense of purpose, and a way to keep a routine. Animals have a strong positive impact on humans' mental and physical health, especially during difficult times. Merely petting or playing with a dog can reduce stress by releasing oxytocin, a natural hormone in the body, and neurotransmitters that stabilize mood and help with happiness, like serotonin and dopamine, can increase. Interactions with animals can lead to a decrease in blood pressure, relax muscle tension, and can help breathing become more regular. With more than 36 million Americans out of work and countless others having disruptions to life, some have lost a sense of meaning and routine. Individuals are accustomed to having a specific role in society, and losing a daily routine is difficult. But pets can help their parents keep schedules. Pets don't know that a pandemic is happening. They still wake up at the same time every day, want their regular meals, want attention and affection. Many of the veterans I worked with would tell me something similar to, "I used to stay in bed until noon, but now that I have a dog, he needs me to be up at 8 o'clock, and it doesn't really matter how I'm feeling." Pets help us remember that even though things are difficult right now, one can still have some type of routine and purpose.
That was Ashley O'Connor of the University of Alaska Anchorage. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at @TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.